And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is power. Each of my guests is discussing a form of power, whether it's personal power, political power, or corporate power. My next guest is a former candidate for the Ventura City Council and a political gadfly. He'll handicap the upcoming Ventura City Council elections for us. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. And you'll want to use that number right now because I'll take the third caller at 639-0008 for four sandwiches or four salads from Urbane Cafe. Two locations to serve you, one right here in Ventura at 4350 Telephone Road in the Barnes & Noble Plaza, the other in Oxnard at 1730 East Gonzales Road, the intersection of Rose and Gonzales. Be the third caller to call in and you'll win four sandwiches or four salads to Urbane Cafe. My next guest, as I said, is Doug Halter. He's originally from Northern California, where he still has a large extended family. In 1978, he moved away to attend the University of California, Santa Barbara, where he graduated with a B.S. in chemical engineering. His work experience includes engineering and marketing positions for Shell Oil, Procter & Gamble, Unisys, and several educational software companies. Over the last several years, he's renovated old homes in Ventura and built two new ones. He's renovated the historic church down in downtown Ventura and opened it up as the Laurel Theater. He later sold the theater to the Rubicon Theater Group. He wears many hats in the community, all kinds of titles. I won't read them all here except to say he's the lead trainer for the California State Positively Speaking Program. He is a former chair of the Ventura Chamber of Commerce. He was the interim chair of the Downtown Ventura Community Council, and on the credentials go. The Los Angeles Times declared him one of the people to watch in 1999, and he received the Ventura Citizen of the Year Award back in 2000. Joining us in the studio, hi Doug, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Bill. I'm honored to be here this morning.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest. As you know, we've been interviewing all of the candidates for the Ventura City Council, in part thanks to your help and your sponsorship, so thank you for that. The election's coming. Oh, the election is coming up. It's going to be Tuesday, November the 8th, at which time three open seats on the Ventura City Council are going to be filled. Only two incumbents are running, which means at least one seat will be filled with a newcomer to the council.
Yeah.
I am fascinated by this process. You're an insider. I'm going to get your inside perspective. But it, looking back at the last few elections, it only takes about 7,500 votes to get elected to the city council. This is in a city that has approximately 70,000 people of voting age.
Right.
Now, not all of them are registered, but are of voting age. Actual figures are kind of hard to come by. But my rough math says that a Ventura city council member is voted in by approximately 10% of the potential voters. That's hardly representative of the city as whole. So as a person who ran for the council twice, I'm curious, what does it take to win a seat on the Ventura City Council, Doug?
Well, Bill, first, I appreciate all the homework that you've done. You're absolutely right on your figures. As a matter of fact, there's about 43,000 households, 63,000 registered voters. You're right, it's about 70,000 that's qualified of age to vote in this community. We're off year elections, so in reality, we typically get about 20 or 23% voter turnout. And what it's really going to take is to get people to the polls. I mean, first off, democracy only works when you have candidates that are willing to run. So I'm very thankful for the candidates that have all chosen to be out there and offer their services to our community as a leader. And secondly, democracy only works if people get out and actually vote, exercise their right to vote. And so it's getting to know which candidates are the best suited to meet the needs of our community, and then sharing your opinion by going in on the voting booth next Tuesday and registering your opinion. So as a candidate, I'll tell you what really, I think having not won a seat, but have ran several times, is really walking precincts. It's something that I always hated doing personally because I felt like people are so busy these days that when they get home, they just don't want to be disturbed. And so it was very hard for me to get past that personally, to do that very frequently. Although it's really enjoyable to meet new people and to answer people's questions. That was probably the thing I enjoyed the most, to be honest. But nonetheless, walking precincts is an essential thing in this community. It's getting people to recognize that there is an election out there. There's nothing else on the ballot. Hopefully someday we could change our city charter and go with on-year elections. I think that might give us more representation from our community for who we elect.
All right, now that makes a lot of sense. My guest is Doug Halter. Doug, walking the precincts is an intriguing and a baffling process to me. I mean, I understand that you get on your own 2 feet and you knock on doors. I get that part. But if only 20% of the voters turn out, how do you decide which precincts you're going to visit? Because the city is large geographically. It's diverse as well with its population. How do you pick which are the most productive, useful precincts to walk?
Well, that's it's all a matter of this is part of your strategy to succeed and to actually win a seat on the council. And when you look at the breakdown of our population, we have about 10,000 to 15,000 people on Ventura Avenue, of which is our lowest voter turnout. Then you have our downtown area, which has 4,000 people. And then we have our beach area, which is about 1,000 to 2,000, if you count the mobile home parks. The mobile home parks do vote. These are senior citizens that, for the most part, still really buy into the concept of voting and the fact that it's a necessity for us to go out and vote. Where even though we gave 18-year-olds the right to vote many decades ago, we still see that their lowest voter turnout tends to be around amongst the 18 to 21-year-olds. So as you go east, you have Midtown, which has about 30,000 people, 20 to 30,000, and the rest of our population lives east of Kimball Road. And so, however, east of Kimball Road tends to be a lot more suburban than the rest of our community. So reaching that community tends to be the most difficult, and that's where precinct walking really comes in important.
All right, so walking out on the east side, and the needs of each of those areas that you have just defined are so dramatically different.
Yes.
Beach dwellers do not really care much about what's going on out east of Kimball Road, and vice versa, I think it's safe to say. So as a person who represents all of those constituencies, as a candidate, how does it fall on you to balance the various needs of those different groups?
Well, it's recognizing that it's what's in the best interest for the whole, and recognizing what's fair across the community for each one of the constituencies, for each one of the voters, each one of the property owners, each one of the citizens. And really in East Ventura, being the newest part of our community and being one of the oldest communities as a whole in the entire state of California, we have extreme diversity across our community. So our newer part of our community, our main focus has always been parks, activities for families, safety, and infrastructure, about streets, making sure they're paved and that we have sidewalks that aren't safety hazards and so forth. In Midtown, and as you go from Midtown to downtown into the west side, there's a lot more issues that become more important, things like social issues with homeless, with code issues or violations, obviously streets. A lot of our streets, fortunately, I think in the last 10 years, the city's done a great job at improving almost all of our streets. There's a few left, and I think you live in one of the neighborhoods built what's left. But nonetheless, we've come a long way in the last 10 years on infrastructure.
Well, that's good to know, and unfortunately, I guess I'm feeling slighted by that last comment. However, I've got to do some business here. I've got to do some business here, Doug. Big shout-out to Maria C. from Santa Paula. She's the winner of the four sandwiches or four salads from Urbane Cafe. Maria, I will get those certificates to you in the mail. They'll be showing up shortly, just in time to kick off the Thanksgiving month of November. Thank you so much for being a loyal listener. Now back to Doug. Doug, the thing that has always intrigued me about running for city council is that you have to do fundraising as well. So how much money does a candidate actually need to raise to win? And I find it interesting, in this year's election, all 11 candidates voluntarily went with the $30,000 cap in spending and no more than $275 per donation. Then they all agreed to do that. And here are some of the figures, which I found astounding. These are taken from the actual city government records. Cheryl Heitman has raised $26,239. Carla Bondi, $16,800. Carl Morehouse, an incumbent, $14,200. Christy Weir, another incumbent, $13,290. Ed Amarillo, $11,300. Danny Carrillo is $10,960. Bill Knox, $10,675. Ken Cousins, $9,725. Brian Lee Rencher, $2,983. And finally, Armstrong raising $1,668. How much does that really take to become elected, and how do you wisely spend this money that you collect?
Well, from experience, I'll tell you, it does take between $20,000 and $30,000. If you're so the 30,000 cap is a reasonable cap, and again, just as a citizen of our community, it's shameful if you waste too much money, too much of our limited resources on campaigning. The real issue is being out there, being present, taking advantage of every opportunity possible to get the message out there on what you stand for, what the issues are, and your ideas of change and how you can make a better community. And that's why it was disappointing to see that there was a couple candidates that weren't able to make time to be here on this radio, because this is a key way to get out your message. And I think that was a missed opportunity on their part. But with that said, is 20 to 30,000 for somebody who's not an incumbent. That's what you really do need, because you need a minimum of 3 flyers to get out there. And usually before absentee voters are able to vote, you definitely have to hit one flyer before then. You need another flyer somewhere midway between the two before absentee voting stops, and then a last flyer right before the election.
Now, you mentioned absentee voting, and I think that's an important element here in Ventura, because about 25% of the voters in the county mm-hmm. vote by absentee ballot. Absentee ballots close tomorrow, November the 1st. So by tomorrow, if they were to open and count those ballots, we'd have a pretty good idea of who the front runners are in the Ventura City Council race. Now, that is not protocol. They won't do that. Right. Will they open the absentee ballots, however, and count them after the election, or is it like a general election where they only break into the absentee ballots if there's a need to really determine who's in first, who's in second, who's in third?
The absentee ballots are usually the first thing counted on Tuesday. So when you see the first precincts being reported, it's usually the absentee ballots. That's what I'm familiar with. Then I did mention, I kind of broke it down between incumbents and non-incumbents. 20 to 30,000 for a non-incumbent. Incumbents in this community, especially with off-year elections and low voter turnout, they have approximately about a 95% chance of getting in. Incumbents just notoriously will get in because they're incumbents. And that's in part due to such a low voter turnout. And you like to think it's because of their support for the status quo and the fact that we're doing a great job. Well, but that's not always the case. We do have an open seat this time. It does add a certain different dynamics. The times I've run, I've typically run when there's no open seat. So
you'd have to displace somebody who's already on the council.
Somebody, and I've gotten within a couple hundred votes of doing that. But it does completely change the race when you run when there's no open seats.
Well, now, it brings up an interesting point. There is one open seat. However, there are two incumbents, Christy Weir and Carl Morehouse. They're running for re-election.
Right.
And you said the incumbents do have an advantage. Do you see either one of their seats vulnerable to defeat in this election?
I think Christy's going to be a shoo-in. I think Carl is vulnerable.
Carl is vulnerable this time through.
I say that as a friend. I mean, quite frankly, as I said, all the people running, for the most part, all but two of them I know very well. And I would say they're friends, they're good people. They're all running for the right reasons, from my perspective. I do think that Carl, though, was vulnerable last time, and he's vulnerable again this time.
Oh.
And there's many reasons for that. Doesn't mean that he's not doing a good job. It just means that he's more controversial.
Okay, and so vulnerability at least possibly one, well, certainly one open seat, possibly two are really in play for this particular election.
That's right.
So let's come back to the main issues. My guest is Doug Halter. He has run for Ventura City Council on numerous occasions. What does it take, issues-wise, to win over 7,000 or more voters that you need to win an election in the Ventura City Council? What do the voters typically want from their candidates?
From my perspective, again, what I've seen is that voters want to know that you're there to listen to them, that you're going to be there to use logic to address the issues as they come forward through your term. They want to know that you're accessible, that you're honest, and that you have their values.
Okay.
And those are the main things that I think people are looking for.
Do voters then hold the candidates accountable? And here's an example. Bill Knox was on as one of my guests, and he brought up the gate at the top of Palomar, which is to block off traffic to safety, public safety, for the high school students at Ventura High School below. The gate was originally a chain that was held together by two old posts, and that seemed to block traffic just fine. The city came in, they put in a new monstrous gate. I mean, you would need a Mack truck to break through this gate at a cost of, I read in the newspaper, $65,000.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently, that same gate was taken down and replaced by a chain with a padlock, exactly what they had before. So here we have a government spending $65,000 and then literally reversing itself back to the way that it was before. Do voters hold their politicians accountable at the city level for those kinds of expenditure, shall we call, mishaps, mistakes, whatever you'd like to term that?
I think that, you know, I like to see more accountability. I think that oftentimes what we do is we have a city that has a city manager that helps to guide the direction. Especially if we have a weaker city council, then the city manager becomes even more important in what direction they set. And from an accountability standpoint, it's very easy to say there are umpteen thousands of line items on our budget, and we have to count on staff to make the right decisions at the right time. But at the same token, none of us like to see the fact that we put up a gate, spend all this taxpayers' dollars, and take it down. And honestly, when I heard they were going to be putting up a gate there, I thought the exact same thing you said, is that a chain works perfectly fine for the last 10 or 15 years. I think the money should be saved towards fixing the problem at Poli Street so we can get that street open again.
Well,
that means, to me, an overpass of some type for students to be able to walk across safely. But I know right now that was pretty much the idea 10 or 15 years ago when we first started chaining off Poli Street and blocking that off, was that somehow we would go ahead and have a permanent solution down the road when we can't afford it. So I wish that money could help seeded that effort.
It would have been $65,000 towards that. My guest is Doug Halter. We're talking about the Ventura City Council elections. And for those of you who are regular listeners, you know that we've interviewed 9 of the 11 candidates for this year's Ventura City Council. Doug, I want to change gears just a little bit, because it was by your patronage that we were able to bring the city council interviews on. And you and your partner are opening up a new store, Villa Tasca Garden Center, on Saturday, November the 19th, at the intersections of Thompson and Catalina. The address is 2057 East Thompson Boulevard. You know, you've been in and out of retailing in Ventura over the past 10 years. Why open up a garden center, and why open it up now, Doug?
Very good question. I got to tell you, if it didn't make a lot of business sense for me in my landscape business, I probably would not recommend opening a retail business at this point in time, given our economic situation. But there's a lot of reasons where it makes sense for me from a landscape perspective. Knock on wood, thanks to a lot of listeners and a lot of my friends, people I know, our business has done extremely well, and I'm very, very, very fortunate, and I know that. But it has become more difficult to find plants, good quality plants. I use a lot of the AgriMem products that are awesome. They have really good mixes. I like to be a distributor for those products. And also, as I find the good quality plant materials, I like to be able to store those and stock those for not only my own use, but for the public to enjoy and to purchase directly from our site. And then I thought at the same time, I might as well take advantage of the fact that leasing land on Thompson is fairly affordable at this point in time. And two, just the fact that I could highlight some of the things that we do from a hardscape perspective, showcasing our barbecues, fireplaces, patios, stamped concrete, pavers, those sort of materials as well.
Wow. Okay. So now you're going to be opening up Villa Tasca Garden Center on Saturday, November the 19th.
Right.
That's just right around the corner. If visitors come to your garden center, what would they expect to see, and what would they expect to learn by going to your new garden center?
Hopefully they come and visit. It should be an enjoyable experience. We're going to make it hopefully a showplace for the community. We're going to start off fairly soft because it takes a while to build up the plant materials. But we will see a variety of natives, of succulents, of Mediterranean plant materials, some of the other plant materials that may not be native or Mediterranean varieties, some of the more lush type plant materials that we use closer to our front doors, usually or in the shadier north side. You see a variety of plant materials. You'll be able to buy, like I said, a lot of the AgriMem product either in bulk or in bags. You will be able to purchase even some of the precast material, columns and pilasters or balustrades, things like that. You will also see fountains and pots and a variety of arrangements of plant materials already made for you in pots. So it should be a really enjoyable experience.
Well, it's a cornucopia of gardening delights there.
Exactly.
My guest has been Doug Halter, former council candidate for the Ventura City Council and also a local businessman. Doug, if people want to learn more about you and learn more about the Garden Center, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
To halterlandscape.com or villatoscagardens.com.
villatoscagardens.com or halterlandscape.com. Right. Doug, thank you. It's been a delight having you as my special guest in studio on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, thank you for having
Great.
Me.